It's the Midweek Drive on location with Southside Broadcasting yet again, and as the first day in November has actually launched, and it's the month of the Holy Souls, of course, we find ourselves at the first ever sci-fi weekender at the wonderful Vauxhall Holiday Camp in the joyous, wonderful world of Great Yarmouth. We, originally being Eva MacDonald and Eloise Sheehan and myself, but one of us has actually gone. Isn't that the case, Eloise?
It is. She couldn't quite make it through.
Well, sometimes, you know, Bumblebee sort of takes no prisoners, and we sort of make that journey from Lincoln to Great Yarmouth, and clearly hasn't made it. Anyway, Eva, we wish you all the very best. Last night, of course, we had not the opening ceremony, but the first ever awards ceremony for Sci-Fi Weekender, and amongst the prize winners were obviously Des Skin, who picked up a couple of key things. We had the Dark Room's very own John Robertson, and a certain Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah, Wine and Sylvester McCoy playing the spoons. Don't need much else, really, do you?
I'm going to try and work that in when I'm actually on stage myself later doing a piece with Sophie Aldred, because I think that's definitely something we can maybe work into the system, which gives it a certain sort of a USP. But we'll wait and see. We haven't had the official opening ceremony. It's now, as I say, Friday, the 1st of November. That'll be taking place in radio times, just when you want to click to it on the podcast, basically. But in our time, probably in about an hour or so from where we are, which is early morning. What are your thoughts on this holiday camp, Eloise? Because, I mean, we seem to cover, I would say, at least 7 or 8 laps of it last night.
I like it. I'm just shocked at the amount of people that are quite happy to be awake at this hour.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all part and parcel of, as I frequently say, so often it's almost become a cliche, the rich tapestry of life. You're listening to Eloise Sheehan and Alex Levchuk on location with the Midweek Drive at the Sci-Fi Weekender, and also goodies that we can look forward to, as well as hopefully a selection of our usual random collection of interviewees and fine individuals who maybe are getting up at this time of the morning. As we go through this day, we'll also be prepping, of course, for another recorded as live edition of the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone and David J. Howe. And actually, I don't want to leave this introduction thing without acknowledging the fabulous work that David and Sam have put together for Johnny and the whole SF Weekender team, because these things don't just happen overnight, quite literally, and I think they've done very well.
Yeah, it's amazing what they've actually managed to pull off in a short amount of time.
We were talking a few moments ago about the awards ceremony, Eloise, and how impressed we were with how Ian Waitz, in particular, received the award for Adrian Tchaikovsky. And it was just the tremendous sort of largesse that was there. Adrian would be so pleased.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit cruel, actually, when you had to walk on the stage after that.
Yeah, we thought, it's going to be Ian. It must be Ian. Ian's here. And there's Ian Waitz. Good to see you this morning.
Yes, and hello to you. I'm still waking up, so forgive me if I sound a bit blurred. But
that's,
you know,
quite all right. As I say, we're ready for all sorts of things. Now, what we've got here is just a whole collection, a smorgasbord, yes, I'll use the word, of all manner of wonderful, delightful Imagineering side of things. Steampunk International, the smallest of things. City of Hope and Despair, Growing Pains. I'm going to put that question to you, which all authors hate, because it's a bit like choosing between your favourite children. Which one would you say, this is mine? This is the one I'm really pleased with.
Now, you accuse me of being cruel.
Exactly.
That is cruel. I don't know, I mean, it's always a case of your latest is one of your favourites. And I had a novella out with PS Publishing, The Smallest of Things, which I'm delighted with, which is a tale of a man who can step between alternative versions of London. And a friend of his comes up, fearing for her life because she's just witnessed her boyfriend being murdered by people from a different London. And that one I really enjoy because it's a chase. There's some really hard science behind it. I consulted with a few friends who are scientists and doctors to get the science right. But I also love this series, which is the City of Dream, the Pelquin's Comet and his sequels, which are space opera with a sort of, I don't know, almost a Firefly overtone. But the main character starts out anyway as being a banker. So if you can imagine an adventure deep space science fiction series with a banker as a hero. And I have a lot of fun with that one, creating alien races and different types of weaponry and things. So those would be the two I'd say if people want to start reading me. Please. No.
I don't go with that. Listen, Pelquin's Comet, number one bestseller, Amazon UK. So excellent stuff from that point of view.
That was a magical moment, actually, because I looked on Amazon UK and there was Pelquin's Comet at number one. At number three was The Invisible Library by Genevieve Cogman. And number four, Feast of Crows by George R. R. Martin. So that was a real, yeah. I took a screenshot. You'll be surprised.
And richly deserved. Eloise.
It's obviously extremely impressive. The amount of books and that you've written right here. I was wondering, how long does it actually take you to write a novel or novella?
a novel used to take me about 8 to 9 months and then a bit of tidying up afterwards. These days, because I'm also running a small press, I'm finding that the writing is getting more and more squeezed and it's taking me a lot longer. The third novel in the Pelkins series is due out next Easter, and that's taken me a couple of years, purely because I line edit every title Newcom Press releases, and this year we released 22 titles. So apart from the commissioning, doing the art and everything else, I've line edited 22 titles during the year. And getting time to write in between is a little tricky at times.
And accepting awards on behalf of Adrian Tchaikovsky, I'm just very impressed.
I would say that much to my amazement, I actually won an award 2 weeks ago I knew nothing about. I wasn't at the ceremony because I
didn't. That's the secret. That is the secret.
Yes. And this was at FantasyCon, and I've been to the last several FantasyCons. And of course, the one I don't go to, I win an award at. So I suspect you have a point.
There's a message there. Yeah. I think already we're working for Sci-Fi Weekend 2020. Which I'm sure Adrian attends to receive an award on your behalf, perhaps.
I think that's an excellent idea, yes.
Anyways.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, it's spot on. How can people actually contact you online, Ian? What's the best way forward?
Either via the website, there is a contact line there. I've just revamped my own Ian Waite's website. New Compress is up and running for years, but my old website, personal, was a bit dodgy. So both have contact details. Get in touch then. I'm happy to talk to anyone. I'm not proud. And it's a wonderful community. So I'm happy to share whatever knowledge or experience I can muster, whatever crumbs that may be.
Well, I'm sure if Joss Whedon is listening to this, he'll say, yeah, it's time we revamp Firefly. I'll take the rights for Pelkin's Comet. So we'll go with that. A banker, no less.
I would probably not object, I suspect, so yes.
Now, one of the exciting things about Sci-Fi Weekender is the range of creative geniuses that you actually get here, and I'm already looking at some of the material that actually features Sophie Aldred, who, of course, is one of the guests of honour here as well. But I was very lucky, actually. We were both very lucky last night, Eloise, because we were sitting right next to the awesome Keith Barnfather. Yes, Keith Barnfather. Keith, you're here now. It's wonderful.
No one's ever called me awesome before. I don't quite know how to take that.
Take it.
Do I feel awesome this morning after last night's awards ceremony? No, I feel shattered, but it was a brilliant awards ceremony. First time they've done it, I thought it was brilliant.
Exactly. I mean, I feel that when it comes to banjo rap, which is what I'm now referring to, that, or brap, perhaps, which is another way forward, maybe a little less is more, perhaps, would be better, really. Just maybe about sort of 15 minutes less would be sort of even better, really.
Now, you might say that. I couldn't possibly
comment.
You know.
Let's talk about Syl and the Devil. Seeds of Arador. Syl, of course, very much at the fore with Jason Connery's episode of Doctor Who, an old mucker of ours from back in the day, and of course Colin Baker and so on. And here he is together, I believe, with Sophie Aldred as well in this assistant. Talk to us about it.
Yes, okay, I will talk to you about it. It's a new spin-off drama which stars Nabil Shaban as Syl. And Christopher Ryan as Kiv, both from Mind Warp, which was one of Colin Baker's Trial of a Time Lord. But of course, Syl had first appeared in Vengeance on Varos.
Jason Connery.
Yes, as you say.
Very young Jason Connery, but we've all become more chronologically gifted since those days.
Still just as gorgeous, of course. And basically, it's a four-part independent drama about Syl being on trial for drug trafficking. What else would you like to know?
Doctor Who scholar, Eloise, and keen Paul McGann fan, what's your thoughts?
Well, I did very much get distracted by the Paul McGann over here.
I thought you might.
I know. You can buy a copy at terribly good discount prices if you come today to SFWX.
I've lost my train.
I understand.
In terms of some of the other things, I mean, it's also nice to see that Demons, Devil's End, which I know Sam was very excited about, and we're delighted to see that. So obviously on so the downtime and Mind Game Saga, which again I had a little perusal of, and actually I think Sophie Aldred is exceptionally good in that. And it's a really good sort of, although it's unofficial clearly, but you can tell the Terence Dicks quality of writing is actually there.
Yeah, bless him. Yeah, because we lost him not long ago. Yes, I mean, Terence writing Mind Game and then being part of the writing team for Mind Games Trilogy, which are what go into Mind Game Saga, the two individual videos. Just Sylvester McCoy walking past cracking jokes as usual. Make it a really nice piece. I mean, Sophie's never worked with prosthetics, so when I asked her to do Syl, she was really keen because she plays a character called Mistress Nar in it, who is all in prosthetics. and that was something that she really, really wanted to do with her career. And, you know, I was glad to help, and she was brilliant in the part.
Outstanding. Well, when you've done your university training in Manchester, what more could you ask for than some prosthetics, really?
Well, now everybody loves a bit of prosthetics, yes.
Any Nitro 9 on set?
Not this time, no. She's not playing a certain young lady from Doctor Who.
That's fine. Keith, share with us how you kind of entered this whole creative, wonderful world of science fiction. What drew you to it?
I've always been a Doctor Who fan. I was a fan. I sort of resisted going to work for the BBC when I was young. Because I thought if you love something, you shouldn't go and work in the same environment, otherwise it's dangerous. But in the end, I sort of left school, didn't pass enough A-levels to go to university, thought I really don't want to go to university, and eventually I went to the BBC in 1978, 79, worked there for 3 years, went to Channel 4 when Channel 4 started in 82, worked there for 3 years, and then formed Real Time in 84. And never look back. I mean, we don't just do science fiction. We do corporate training. We do foreign language programming in the Greek world.
Ever been tempted to do a full mashup and perhaps get Syl doing a bunch of corporate training with, say, the NHS?
I would love to. Unfortunately, corporate training is rarely inventive.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, and of course you can't amputate with Syl because he hasn't got any legs.
That's why I suggested NHS, you see.
Oh,
you know.
I see. Yeah, so it's cheaper.
There was a rationale behind my question. Eloise. No, she's still staggered by that Paul McGann thing. It's that sort of consciousness
it's the banjo. Come on, it's the banjo from last night. It was still in shell shock.
I'm going to actually just step away from that in a sort of very, you know, coherent and sensible way, basically.
Nothing new, then.
Tell us about how people can get in touch with Mythmakers online.
If anybody out there is interested, and I hope you are, if you want to buy any of our range, Syl, the dramas, our ongoing Mythmakers series, and the re-releases, the Doctors, which are going out through COS, which are wonderful because you're getting six Mythmakers on each release and of an era, so you've got all the Colin Baker, Colin and all of his assistants, blah, blah, blah. All of that you can get from www.timetraveltv.com.
Keith, as we knew it would be, it's been a privilege. You kept us sane last night, which is challenging in the event. And we'll speak again soon, no doubt.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
David J. Howe, as I live and breathe, hello. You've done it again.
We're here again. Hello, hello, hello.
Except we're not here again, because this is the first time we've been here in terms of the Sci-Fi Weekender at Great Yarmouth, because we were here for the recce.
We did a recce, yeah, which was great. And it wasn't raining then, although it's pouring with rain today. So, it's absolutely fabulous venue. We're standing in the main void at the moment, which is all lit up in neon, and there's a countdown. Look, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, video walls and dancing girls will be on and everything, and it's going to be just amazing. So,
and did you survive the ceremony last night? Because we obviously had to leave with 4 awards still outstanding. The banjo did it for us, frankly.
Yeah, no, Mr. B the Gentleman Rhymer is fantastic, absolutely fantastic performer. On the banjo. It's not actually a banjo, it's called an electrolele or something.
Right.
He plays.
Explains it, Eloise.
That makes sense now.
It completely explains it. No, it was a fantastic award ceremony. It was full of laughter and music and lots of ribald language. And,
thank you. Yeah, nicely put. Nicely served.
Yes. Yes, but it was very, very healthy and very positive. And
cathartic.
I think everyone had a good time.
And here
fantastic.
We are. The day starts obviously here with the opening ceremony.
Yes.
I myself am actually sort of psyching myself up for the piece with Sophie Aldred in a
Absolutely.
Matter of moments in all sorts of ways. David, what are you most looking forward to this weekend?
What am I looking forward to? Probably leaving at the end of it all. No, obviously as one of the co-organisers, you get involved in every single element of it. So, if I have a hope for the weekend, it's that everything runs as smoothly as it can, and if anything goes wrong, no one notices. And we just sort of sort it all out behind the scenes, which is usually what happens, to be honest. But there's a great bunch of people here. All the attendees are fabulous. We've got a lovely venue. We've got a great packed schedule of events going on. It's 10 o'clock on Friday morning at the moment. We're just starting off. Sales tables all set up here. Books, videos, more books, jewellery, T-shirts, you name it. All the guests are coming in. Sylvester McCoy is here. I just had a chat with Glenn Fabry. 2008 D artist. Tons of stuff going on. I think it's going to be absolutely awesome day. I hope you and the listener really enjoy this. It's going to be a great experience.
You know, one of the great things about covering events like this as an audio diary is that every so often you get a chance to actually encounter the hosts of Piercing the Veil, at least one of them. It's Stephen Pierce. How are you, Stephen?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Good. Okay, Stephen, like most of us, this is the first sci-fi weekend that has actually taken place in the holiday camp in Great Yarmouth. Your initial thoughts, having schlepped over from Wales yesterday?
It's a completely different venue. I think it's... I like how it's quite compact, whereas in Pwllheli it was actually a more spaced out. Like, the time port was actually quite a walk from the main void.
Space and time is so relative, Stephen, yeah. Let's not go there. And as I was saying last night, to the chagrin of your father, Robin, of course, that I was very impressed with your review for Pikachu in the new magazine, which is, of course, released at this particular convention. Good to see that's there. And I know we came almost to blows about my views on Godzilla, but it's fair to say I've seen both movies, and I'm kind of mixed about both of them, but Pikachu gets my vote, really.
I liked Pikachu. It wasn't what I thought it would be. I was kind of hoping for more. But as far as the first live-action movie goes, it wasn't that bad.
That's very true. One of the sort of foundations on which, of course, the Pierce family actually rest is Bo. Is Bo with you today, or have you left Bo in Wales?
We've left Bo in Wales.
No!
Yeah, Bo has been left in charge of the rats and the lizard.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. But the good news is Maria Pierce is with us. Maria, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm fine, yes. I mean, what did you think of yesterday's ceremony? Did you stick to the end? We had to leave with four awards to go, actually.
No, we stuck to the very end. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. First red carpet I've ever been to.
So. Really?
Yes, really.
You astound me.
I know. It was really nice. It was lovely.
Excellent. Well, there we are, two of the Pierce family. Is your sister around?
She isn't on this one, but she has been to...
But she's now co-hosting on Piercing the Veil,
yeah,
I believe.
She is, and she's been to... I think she's been to four of these, maybe five. The only thing is, it was easier for her when it was in Pwllheli.
Of course, exactly.
Because now it's about 7 hours.
It's a whole new world, literally. Exactly. Mass transportation hasn't been sorted out there. Well, as I say, I'm sure the rest of the weekend will go swimmingly. I know I might be borrowing your dad, Robin, to actually do a little bit of audio promenading with me in betwixt, as I say, my duties, which include in a few moments hopefully going and being the first interviewer. Oh, my Lord, no pressure. With Sophie Aldred. Well, I just don't know, Maria.
No, that is true. But yeah, I've got faith in you. You'll be fine.
Thank you. There we are. That's good. And we'll speak again very soon.
Yes, thank you.
Well, the excitement continues as we continue our wait and the anticipation for, as I say, the first official interview at Sci-Fi Weekender, which, at least thankfully, I've now actually identified the fact I know where I am, kind of in a sort of philosophical sense, but somebody who always knows where he is, whatever outfit he's wearing, and he's wearing a fabulous superhero-themed, Marvel-themed suit of many, many colours, is the awesome...
I'm Jim Credible.
Of course, exactly, Jim. Now, talk to us, Jim, about how you're finding Great Yarmouth's excellent location for Sci-Fi Weekender Part 10.
Frankly, it is wonderful here. A few little teasing issues when we were moving in, but we knew that was going to happen. It's a new place, we don't know the people, you know, it's just getting ourselves up and running. But now that we're up and going, it's all kind of running together, everything's closer than it is. It's nice not to have a 20-minute walk back to my caravan every time I need to go grab something.
But certainly my colleague today, Eloise Sheehan, who was very impressed with your Joker persona in Sheffield. She's at a friend at present. We're all geared up for the whole system there. You've switched more to a superheroic line. Was that a deliberate choice, or was that a case of, you know, Area 51 needs a new, more positive view, particularly if the girls are going to be zombies?
It was more I'm too lazy to make my hair green. But no, the pineapple suit that I've worn before seemed to go down pretty well. Sounds like I can wear suits throughout.
Of course.
So why not just be suited and booted when I can be?
You know, exactly, Sammy. I'm wearing a tie myself, as you can see. It's all set for that sort of slightly sort of eccentric routine. It's going to be fabulous. We will speak again, I'm sure, as the whole thing proceeds. I'll continue my warm-up exercises now for obviously working through that. I mean, it's like Lambda meets Manchester drama. It's going to be great. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Enjoy.
Well, it has completed. At least the first interview is completed. And I have to ask the superb, amazingly wonderful Sophie Aldred, how was I as an interviewer? Was it okay?
You were great. It's really nice to have an interviewer who's done their homework, and you were asking me kind of interesting questions as well.
I had to ask about bananas and pyjamas. Yeah. I mean, it's a classic of its time.
Absolutely, yeah.
But again, you're here. We won't repeat the interview because obviously that's a bit of magic which will stay from that point of view. Your thoughts on the venue and the whole sort of Great Yarmouth experience so far?
This is a very different Doctor Who convention, and what it does is it bridges the gap between people who don't want to go and stand in long queues and just, you know, go from guest to guest or go and buy merchandise. This is entertainment. You know, this is all about the interviews, the entertainment, the kind of the showmanship. You know, yeah, I love that. And the fact that we're in a holiday camp is kind of really unusual.
It's Delta and the Banner Mask revisited, isn't it, really?
It is, really. Yeah, so I love it because there are some wonderful conventions, small conventions around, which I really love doing. Like, for example, there's Utopia, there's Bedford Who, there's small conventions like that. And then there's these vast ones, the MGMs and the Showmasters ones. And this is great because it's sort of in between that. And it's really in the world of an event, a real experience to remember. Mm.
Which is fantastic so far, certainly sure that's passed on. Now we've got Eloise Sheehan, who's my colleague here, one of my former students at the University of Lincoln. Eloise was in the audience. Sophie has given me a passing grade for the interview. I think.
Yes, I definitely have, yeah.
Well, you know, first time interview, I thought, where are we going to go here? You could have been all... Eloise, any questions?
I do not have any questions. I was just really enjoying the interview out there.
Good. Oh, that's good. We aim to please.
And we're going to take you now to, obviously, the signing session. We will hopefully see you, as I say, around and anon in all sorts of ways, as, obviously, they're coming to take us away.
Yeah, yeah. Ha-ha.
There's only too much we can actually do on a sort of Halloween, November the 1st, All Souls special, really. Sophie Aldridge has been fantastic sharing some thoughts with a good self. We'll take a few photos, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you very much.
The adventure continues in all sorts of ways, because we're delighted to welcome now to our general audio promenade, or at least our backstage here in the green room at Sci-Fi Weekend, the awesomely talented
Fintan McKeown.
Fintan, share with us, you've just come off stage, you've had that wonderful experience. How did you sort of feel the ambience? Did you feel the love?
I did. Passion, commitment, energy, interaction. It was all there. But you have to generate it. It doesn't just happen. You have to.
Now, we were talking, actually, in betwixt times, about how fandom develops all the range of things. And, of course, there is a huge connection between yourself and the Star Trek universe. Would you like to just share that with us?
Yeah, well, my involvement was in Star Trek Voyager. I played Kate Mulgrew's on-screen lover, I think the only on-screen lover depicted in the series.
Apart from her dog, of course.
Well, I didn't know about that. This is the first I heard of it. If I'd known that at the time, I would have taken a different
whole new contract
direction. Whatever, but we'll discard that for the moment. Yeah.
And in terms of that, because clearly actually just being part of the whole Star Trek universe means clearly there's conventions, the various other bits and pieces. And you were saying about how sort of passionate, obviously, Star Trek fans in particular actually get with that series.
Absolutely, and it goes on. It's forever. They're as passionate now as they were, 20 years ago or more, and it's terrific to experience.
As we sit here now in a wonderful sort of part of Great Yarmouth, etc., what advice would you give to a young up-and-coming actor who basically wants to have, you know, longevity in the industry?
Show up and say the lines.
As simple as that.
Mm, that's the hardest thing in the world to do.
What brought you into the profession yourself?
I suppose desire, subconscious desire to be an actor, because it didn't seem a legitimate career choice, but I found myself in it. And once you are, you're in it, you're in it. It's what you do. You really are an actor.
And I have to ask the question, have you been to Great Yarmouth before, or is this a case of, no, this is a whole new experience?
First time here, just got here last night, so I really haven't seen much of it, being dark at night. Perhaps another time I'll get to see it. I heard it's beautiful parts of it.
Well, indeed so, and well worth sort of accessing from that point of view. And what else can we look forward to seeing you in the near future? What other conventions will we be attending? I gather that you may be heading off to Birmingham for the Star Trek event there?
I've just come from Birmingham last week. I was at the Destination Star Trek, with some of the guests also appearing here today. David Warner, for instance. We sat opposite one another in Birmingham. And no immediate conventions. I'm working on a play at the moment. I'm developing that in conjunction with various people. But
watch the space.
I'd like to develop this play in ideally in a kind of very creative educational manner. I'm thinking of if I could, ideally, if I could work with young, aspiring actors, students, professionals in some ways and forge the production out of that. And I've spoken to some people in the University of Stockholm in Sweden, and I'm hopeful about that. But, I want to sort of forge a new means way of performing and incorporating the various media that are very prominent in both, you know, on stage and in cinema, streaming, live streaming, audio playback, all the various techniques, but based on the concept of live theatre and the actor being the single force and generator of whatever energy, and also the one that sustains the whole apparatus and also the power of the spoken word.
Well, the 20th century was noted for the work of Alexander, for the work of Bertolt Brecht, for the work of Stanislavski. Who knows, you could be opening a whole new routine here for the 21st century.
You know, I have worked with Howard Pinter and worked with him and been to his house and interacted with him, and I have very kind of raw, visceral rapport with him. He just leaves me to it. Well, he did, he's dead now. And whereas a lot of people are very reverential and academic in their sort of assessment of him, he just left me to it. Just leave him be, let him go, let him do it. And he seemed to appreciate that. And it was an osmosis that and he, of course, was a great fan of Beckett. His favourite playwright was Beckett. And, I would like to develop something new creatively in terms of that kind of theatre.
And I have to say, I also have to comment on your T-shirt as well, which is Marlon Brando in The Godfather that you're channeling from that point of view. Interesting choice.
Yeah, he's my hero. Not necessarily even because of his acting, which is extraordinary and compelling, but also his social and political and activism throughout the 60s that not a lot known about, but that probably meant more to him than acting, which is not a lot of people know that, you know, but it's apparently it's true. There's a new book out November, Marlon Brando, The Contender, which delves into that whole area of his life, which could be really interesting.
Julius Caesar to The Godfather to Last Tango in Paris through The Joys of Superman, of course. Awesome. It's a pleasure speaking with you itself, Flinton, and we look forward to hearing from you again in the very near future.
Thank you very much. Lovely talking to you.
I think Confucius would have actually struggled to come up with the final closing quote that Andrew Lee Potts just provided for the audience at Sci-Fi Weekend. Andrew, it was awesome sharing the stage with your good self, but share the quote with our listener, please.
I just said, don't wipe your bum with sandpaper.
Amazing. I mean, there we are. Eloise, that just makes it work. As a 14-year-old, when you basically still have the photograph, because she showed Sam and David the photograph. She might even bring it out now of when she first encountered you, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Still a huge fan. And not in a scary way either.
No. Hopefully not.
Anyway, moving on. Andrew, how are you finding the event so far?
It's great. Yeah, I've done this event before when it was at a different location. The team are brilliant. They really look after everybody. Everyone loves it. Everyone's like a big family here. And yeah, I really enjoy doing this one. Genuinely do.
And lots of exciting things obviously happening from the point of view. But it's the usual feedback thing. We normally do this with respect to people on the telephone. Did you have a reasonably interesting interview there? Was I okay?
You were excellent. I just said I appreciated the good questions because not a lot of interviewers do the research that you did. So it's nice that you knew what you was talking about.
So I take it you'll come back and join us again soon.
Yeah, of course.
Eloise, anything from yourself?
No, it's just a really good interview. The interview, it flowed really well with both of you.
Oh, thank you very much.
And we've got this photograph now, I think. Let's there we are. We can do this and we'll work our way through this. Oh, she's lost it. You see, it's just technology. See, this is what happens.
Right.
It's a single, it goes 1.5, etc.
She's panicking. She's swiping like a mad woman.
It's the tension. It's the challenge.
What are you going to show me? I don't know.
It is definitely there because I've seen it. You were very pleased.
It does exist.
It does exist,
it
exactly.
Does.
What,
like,
is it,
14?
A picture of you and I?
Yeah, I was like 14 at the time and I'm 23 now, so it's quite an old picture.
Ah.
And it'll be there whilst we're doing that. I'll take it. Andrew, for the moment, many thanks. Is there a website that people can actually get in touch with you on or sort of follow your
stuff? I've just relaunched my website for my directing and stuff, which people can contact me on, and that's www.keychainproductions.co.uk.
Keychainproductions.co.uk. No anomalies in there?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to go and see, wouldn't you?
And you join us as we're having a little domestic between the Pierces here, which is always very exciting here at Sci-Fi Weekend. Robin, I just realised we haven't had a chance to have a few words with you today.
No, not yet.
We've spoken to, obviously, Maria. We've spoken to Stephen, but not yourself.
Well, you know, I'm going full ninja on this. Seen, look for, I cannot be seen. Listen for, I cannot be heard. Sniffed for, I cannot be smelt.
Personally, I've always said it would be a fine improvement on our higher educational system if students, before they could graduate, had to snatch the pebble from our hands and walk across sandpaper without leaving marks.
Sandpaper, not hot coals.
Nice. Exactly.
Sandpaper would be good, you know, but hot coals are better.
And for further reference, please check out the advice given by Andrew Lee Potts at the end of his interview, which is also online as well.
Absolutely. That's an area of personal hygiene I will not go near.
So we're currently waiting for your good self to take centre stage in the wonderful kiddies area to talk about children and Sophie Aldred.
Absolutely. I've just been in there and there isn't a stage, so it's going to be quite, you know, intimate, I suppose.
Scary authors, I believe.
Scary authors. I've had a look at them. Yeah, they can be off-putting. A little bit kind of dubious about interviewing Sophie Aldred because, of course, I'm following in esteemed footsteps because... Eloise and I saw a really cracking interview this morning. I don't know if I can follow that.
It was a rather good interview, to be added.
You know, unfortunately, you've replicated a lot of my questions, but it's okay. I will replicate some of yours. I hope we don't have the same audience.
It'll be splendid, I'm sure. How do you feel the day has gone so far as we pretty much approach the final batch of interviews?
Oh, I've enjoyed it. I've been walking around, talking to people, people I haven't seen for a while, people that I didn't know me but somehow do, which is rather creepy, but okay, we can deal with that. You know, somebody comes up to me and says, "Oh, you're Robin Pierce." My first reaction is, "Don't hit me in the face."
Very good. Eloise, any thoughts from yourself?
No.
Eloise, consistent as ever, straight there, no messing about. You know, if she comes up with an interrogative, I'll probably sort of collapse with shock in all sorts of ways. I blame the youth of today.
She is going to shock you one day. She is. She is just laying an ambush for you.
Robin, you do realise that, you know, the regular slot you do on a weekly basis now used to be fulfilled by a certain Ed Fortune on Siren Radio.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's a shocker.
See, now I'm nervous because I know I won't do it anywhere near as well as Ed did.
And he's here now. Ed, how are you?
Hello. I'm barely here because I think, hilariously, I think the last time I actually talked to you, I was having public transport issues. Guess what? I'm running 2 hours late because I've been having public transport issues.
Wow. Consistency, Ed. That's what I like about you. Consistency.
I need wings. That's what I need. I just need wings.
Or Red Bull?
No, just a jetpack, I think. Or possibly my own kind of Geordie version of an Iron Brew Man costume. That's what I need. Not Iron Man, but Iron, you know.
I think that what Ed needs is like Prince Namor little ankle wings.
Nice.
But not the green trunks.
I think Jordan would like that. He'd appreciate that. Turn up at the office in those wings. That'd be great. I'd even get Emma Tinson back for that point of view.
I think they'd have to be quite substantial wings.
Kids were teeny.
Yeah, they were wee ones.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ed, at one stage in the original preview programme, I thought I was going to be interviewing you, or you were interviewing me, which was quite surreal, but never mind.
It's quite odd. I mean, it's...
Happy to do that, obviously.
It's Cy Spindles, who's lovely and fantastic. And yes, I think I'll be talking about writing, because that's mostly what I do. Probably careers in journalism. Who can say these
and
things?
And of course, being literary editor for Starburst magazine, the world's longest running fantasy and science fiction and horror publication.
You've mentioned it now, so the Brave New Words Award is opening again for 2019 submissions for an award in Derby in 2020. So see you there, and if you have any suggestions, do let us know. You should know the address by now.
Ed, it's been awesome getting a few seconds with your good self. Hopefully we'll speak again soon. And will you join us on the radio sometime?
I would absolutely love to. Right now, I have to be on stage.
Yeah, go, so go out of the wind.
Go, Ed, go.
Robin, before we get into flatulence jokes and campfire things, you've just actually located a listener to the Stone Tapes. And does she ever listen to the Midweek Drive as well?
I would certainly hope so. If not, she can explain herself to me. Karen Woodham.
See, Karen,
so you just caught me by surprise. You always do this.
That's how we work. You see, the script is there. Karen, good to connect with your good self. Your thoughts on the Stone Tapes?
I really enjoy them. It's something interesting to listen to. It's different. And it's just, you know, passes the time, doesn't it, as well? Especially when Robin's on.
We do sweat blood, obviously, as opposed to just passing the time. You know, the creativity, the 3 months of rehearsals that goes into every sort of sign there.
That's not what he said.
So will you be attending the live transmission and the live event Stone Tapes that we're having tomorrow?
I've got it down in my diary to do it. Yes, I have. So looking forward to it.
You can get Sam to give a shout out there, or possibly yourself, Robin.
I will spot her and I will shout out.
You're the listener, you. And your thoughts in terms of Sci-Fi Weekender so far?
I'm loving it. I'm loving the new venue. I love that it's all undercover, so we don't get soaked when we're trying to get anywhere. Prices wise, I think it's a lot cheaper than what Bethelli was.
That was in Wales.
That was in Wales, exactly.
Extortion. And if you're English and you go to Wales, it's not going to happen.
Very true.
That's your English money.
I think as well the fact that because everything's so close together, we can get things a lot more in as well. Because obviously there's no travelling back and forth, like over to the Mash and Barrel was like a 15-minute, 20-minute walk, wasn't it? Depending how sober or you were, Sam.
Five tops. Five. You're younger than I am.
Yeah, but I didn't use the go-karts.
And you're listening to people reminiscing about an event that took place in a country far, far away and a long, long time ago. Karen, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Speak again soon.
Thank you very much.
And so the day continues, at least day one of our adventure here for Southside Broadcasting and indeed the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio at the fabulous, wonderful World of Great Yarmouth and Sci-Fi Weekend 10. And I find myself an extraordinarily wonderful, talented writer just ahead of the interviews and various other bits and pieces. It's the awesome Richard
Dinnick. Hello.
Exactly. There we are. You see. See, already the teamwork is working there. Yeah, you know, I say Richard, you say
yes. You say no.
So
we're get off.
Now, both my interviews today have actually been in the void. I think that was the one with Sophie Aldridge at the start of the whole day. Then a couple of hours later, we did The Joys of Andrew Lee Potts. And now, of course, the creme de la creme in many ways. We moved into a whole different area, which, again, I've even forgotten the time. It's a time board. No, it is the time board.
Spaceport. Yeah. Yes.
This works very well on radio, obviously. Just look at the online things there. Richard, we'll talk more about this, obviously, on stage, but for the benefit of our listener who might not be here or might not be able to actually sort of follow through the magic of what you produce, you really have become the go-to person when it comes to some major cult classics. We're talking Doctor Who, Lost in Space, Thunderbirds, and so on. Are you living the dream?
Definitely. I mean, I was... I'm going to go totally off-piste now, but... So to get here, I said to Sam and David, "Oh, my car's in the thing, and my wife's got the other car, blah blah blah." And I says, "Okay, Fraser Hines will come and pick you
yes.
up."
Yes.
So I was like, "Oh wow, I'm going on a road trip."
With Jamie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you said that to me when I was 10, I'd have been, "Nah, that's not happening." But so that's kind of like I am totally living the dream, living the dream, being at the Sci-Fi Weekender, going to Doctor Who conventions. But yeah, writing Doctor Who, writing Thunderbirds, writing Lost in Space. You know, yeah, definitely.
And there's something I think probably about the characters. I mean, we talked for a lot about why is it? What is it? The things that makes these things resonate over the years, the generations, and so on. I mean, even go back. You were talking about Dacre Stoker and Dracula and characters like Tarzan and Sherlock Holmes and Simon Templar and so on. That they work through that. They are very strong, whether you're dealing with the Doctor, whether you're dealing with the Tracy brothers, whether you're dealing with even the revamped, because we'll talk about this again, the revamped version of Lost in Space, they are very potent talismen, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting, I did a panel at another convention, and it suddenly struck me that the main difference between American superheroes and British superheroes, if I can use that phrase, of the Doctor and Sherlock Holmes and Tarzan and all the rest of it, is that they don't wear masks, and American superheroes tend to, unless you're Tony Stark
or Captain Britain.
Oh yeah, we did. Yeah, that's true. He's a Marvel character. So because even with the Tracys, they're British created, even though they're American, and they don't wear. although they have a secret island. But
they have, in the words of your namesake Richard Reynolds, the classic notions of actually having costumes. They don't have the mystical powers. They don't really have tragedy in their family, although possibly their mother's there and there is an issue in terms of their father, etc. So maybe there's that. There is a suspension of disbelief, but you're quite right. Well, they do. They kind of, certainly in the new incarnation of Thunderbirds I go, they're less of a top secret base, and the Earth Defense Force tends to come in as the kind of the overarching thing, which of course Gerry Anderson was very keen on, whether it be WASP, WASP, World Aquanaut Security Patrol, World Space Patrol, and don't get me started on WIN with World Intelligence Network and Joe 90, otherwise we'll be here all evening.
Well, indeed, let's talk three-letter acronyms. I think what with the modern iteration of Thunderbirds, I'm sure you'll recall, but maybe your listeners won't, but the old iteration of Thunderbirds, they had guns
in their cigarettes.
Yes, and cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a frightening combination.
Yeah, they don't wander around with a packet of Marlboro 20, light in their
Lady
pouches.
Penelope Creighton Ward used to have a cigarette holder and extender.
Oh yeah, very elegant. Yes, she was like,
don't do it.
Her and the Pink Panther. That was it with the cigarette holders, and maybe Noel Coward. But no, so they didn't want. They had to have a security force. So they invented kind of like the World Defense Force to have the guns and be the guys to arrest, because international rescue is about rescue, not apprehension of villains,
and
really.
It's a point that's been clearly made. I mean, I was fortunate enough at the start of this series run to speak to one of the producers who's, I think, since left the series, Sharon Lark. She was a sort of co-producer, and she was very keen to say they wanted to be very true to the original Gerry Anderson spirit and not go into a situation where it becomes the kind of action hero of the week battling scenario and so on.
Oh, definitely. I mean, any Thunderbirds, whether it be Thunderbirds episode or Thunderbirds Our Go episode, there is a rescue, probably an international one, at the heart of the episode. Mine strays a little bit from that. I mean, there is a rescue, but there's also some shenanigans going on as well.
As I say, Late-Fingered Fred. I couldn't resist that. David Graham will forgive me.
I mean, that's great. It's just like having, you know, I felt like...
chills?
Definite chills. I felt like I was like almost directing a remake of the Long Good Friday.
Well, there we are. Exactly. And certainly the background of a more athletic Parker that we see. It's still voiced, of course, by the awesomely legendary David Graham, and long may he continue. I mean, in a year which sadly we lost Shane Rimmer earlier this year in terms of Scott Tracy, it's good to see that David's still working through that. One of the slight misses, I think, just off topic again slightly, it was regrettable that Shane Rimmer never quite, because I think there was talk at one stage that he might have been the voice of Jeff Tracy, etc.
I think that was the intention. I mean, we got Lee Majors, he's fairly iconic.
Indeed.
He's fairly
all in slow motion.
Yeah. Yes, with a kind of
exactly
sound in the background. Yes,
so great stuff as far as that's concerned. Obviously, the episode that we're talking about that you can review and see online, etc., is Thunderbirds Go Get Away, not as in Get Away, but Get Away as in.
Yeah, it's not a holiday advert, no.
As I say, we talked about some of the other bits and pieces. We'll be going in and say, I think in a matter of moments now, hopefully, if somebody comes together, so or maybe we'll just do it here. You know?
Yeah, let's just do it in the green room, yeah.
And so it's all purple, whatever.
It's a purple room, yes.
Clearly, the Doctor Who thing is the Underwater Menace. You've, of course, that's one, that's the Doctor, that's the 11th Doctor.
Yes.
You've also written in terms of graphic narrative form, of course, for the Jodie Whittaker incarnation and so on. So it's working through that. This is a question I put on stage. Clearly, it's a standard cliched one. Favourite Doctor?
I have to say, well, my Doctor was Pertwee. I grew up with him, but now I think it would have to be a draw between Tennant and Baker just because I think they embody so well. I mean, I love John Pertwee to absolute bits, and he was my Doctor. But I think, you know, by the time...
His record said the same. I am the Doctor.
Well, indeed, and he certainly was. And when I can't remember how old I was. I was young when Tom Baker came along, and I thought he was some sort of alien imposter, because I hadn't quite figured out regeneration.
I think, actually, my late mother felt the same, because he was so strange, so weird. Yeah. I mean, I had this kind of experience slightly with Patrick Troy, because my first very earliest memories was that regeneration scene, and I never really followed through the William Hartnell, but I followed through the Patrick Troughton thing, and then obviously Troughton's sentenced to Earth and metamorphosis into Pertwee, and we go through these processes. But ultimately, you're into this whole sort of system of, yeah, everybody has their own particular generational favourite.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been really fortunate with Titan to write... the recent kind of, well, I like to think of it as like a 55th anniversary special, because it had all the Doctors in it. And I kind of thought, okay, well, I've done, you know, and it was originally going to be called The 13 Doctors, rather, originally. And then we suddenly realised that it had the War Doctor, so where the hell does he fit in? And Tennant is two Doctors or something, so it's actually 15 Doctors at least. And so we
I
just
could talk about Curse of Fatal Death, but perhaps not.
We could, and the Cushing movies, and the Valeyard even. But
maybe we are all the Doctor.
Indeed, well, exactly. I'd like to think there is a little bit of the Doctor in all of us, definitely.
And we'll talk more about that after we've actually done our piece on stage, where, of course, we do the usual postscript. We've done a little prequel here. Richard, it's been awesome connecting with your good self. A reminder in terms of people wanting to search for your good self online, Richard Dimmick, is there a website that's available?
Absolutely, richarddimmick.com, and I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter at Richard Dinnick, really imaginatively. Just Google me, I'm around.
Well, as the exploding stage and the pop-up puppet theatre actually continues in the background, which is very difficult to say without actually sort of using saliva all over the place, so we'll work our way through it. We're here with Sam Stone. Sam, I think it's been extraordinary. Your thoughts on the other day?
I'm absolutely delighted it's gone well. I knew it would go well, but it's exceeded my expectations, I should say. It's been brilliant.
And Eloise, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's going really well. I'm surprised at the diversity of people that's actually here at the moment.
That's a good observation, because we do have a big range of people from all ages, all walks of life, children, and everybody enjoys it on different multiple levels.
Well, hopefully, I mean, none of my interviewees have kind of said, never work with me again, although they could have just been polite, but hopefully all went well with that side of things.
Well, the ones I've observed were very excellent, so well done.
So we salute you, and we'll catch up with you in day two tomorrow.
And you can give me that tenner later.
Of course. And so, as we begin to exit stage left, pursued by a bear, we finally managed to locate an individual who, effectively, I think, created such a perfect balance when it came to Gil Gerard and his wonderful elemental self earlier today that I thought it was, frankly, absolutely awesome. We are, of course, referring to the awesome Professor Elemental. How are you, sir?
No, very good. I think we should be safe from the bear in here. It's a kind of Scooby-Doo style chase has been going on, but I fooled him by dressing up as a French maiden pointing in the other direction, so we should be absolutely fine here in the green room.
I will give warning here that this is where my automatic Pavlovian trigger response comes in with the classic Fozzie Bear joke. Good grief, the comedian's a bear. No, he's a nut. He's a wearing a necktie.
That was always one of my favourites. That album was like one of the biggest influences on anything I've ever done, that Muppet album. It was beautiful.
It led me to a career in academia. Anyway, life...
Sorry.
How do you feel it's been going so far?
It's lovely, as it always is. It's always lovely. It's always unpredictable. You never know who or what you're going to end up talking to or about. And I enjoyed chatting to Buck Rogers and his ego. Both of them very nice.
Kudos, certainly, in terms of the delivery there. We're working with Gil Gerard tomorrow, obviously, on the Stone tapes. So I think it was nice. The only minor thing, and it is minor, I don't know if he's listening to this, I'm sure he'll take it. Wrong weather for shorts.
Yes, wrong legs for shorts.
You know, again, you'd but...
I can say it, because I've had that criticism levelled at me enough times as I stomp out in my Speedos into Asda or somewhere. You know, it's not... You've got to get the timing and the legs right for the leg wear.
It's all about the timing. But other than that, I thought he was a wonderful individual. I think you brought out some wonderful thoughts about him, in particular with his views about how acting's changed and that sort of lies. And also, I think, a very, very self-effacing character, I thought.
Yes, he doesn't. He certainly doesn't like to blow his own trumpet. Typical American. They like to keep themselves, the Americans, I find. They don't like to talk about how great they are all the time.
To incorporate the word duplicitous, as he did. That's pretty keen.
But I did actually, I really enjoyed particularly the story of how he got to where he was, because in itself it sounded like a Hollywood story, being a cab driver in New York and then meeting a random person who then got him to where he, you know, needed to be. I thought that was a rather lovely little adventure.
These days, you probably would say, don't go with that random person. But, you know,
yeah,
back in the day.
A bit less trusting, with good reason. Absolutely.
And what about yourself in terms of the Professor Elemental persona? How can we actually access your details online and so on?
You can witness my struggle with a 10-year-long midlife crisis at ProfessorElemental.com, where there's lots of music and videos and all kinds of cool stuff with my face on. What more could you want in life, really?
Dacre Stoker, who would have thought that we'd be sitting here in Great Yarmouth speaking to the awesome legend relative to Bram Stoker, of course, himself. Dacre Stoker, fantastic to see you today.
Well, thank you. I'm still trying to figure out what's so great about Yarmouth. It's a wonderful event we're having here, but it must have something to do with the geology or
honestly, you colonials, you're all the same.
Well, I won't go so far as the other great things, but no, it's wonderful here. This is my first science fiction weekend, and it's a lot of enthusiasm. They seem to be interested in Dracula and me, so that's a good thing.
Hugely so, and I must admit Sam was very excited when we revealed on the stone tapes that you were coming to be here and present for the whole thing, so it's great from that point of view. Just share with the listener, how far have you travelled?
Well, I've come all the way from South Carolina. I've actually been in Dublin, Ireland for a little while prior to coming here. There was the Bram Stoker Festival, and I actually did an interesting thing. I sort of a little diversion, but this is what we're calling the Charlotte Stoker Cholera Tour, which actually involves Sligo and Ballyshannon, which is really kind of horrifying when you really think of what happened to her there.
And also the fact that Sligo, on my mother's side, the McCormack side, we were based in Ballinafad. We're not too far away from Sligo. It was the closest town from that point of view. So spooky, really.
It is. When you really, I mean, we all live in this made-up world of horror, but that world in 1832, what Charlotte went through was horrifying. When she witnessed premature burial, misdiagnosis, people, her own people, sort of large, you know, fixed bayonets, keeping them away from safety. Must have been just horrifying.
But at least they didn't have Donald Trump. But let's move on.
lucky them.
Or Boris Johnson, but let's move on. Clearly, the vampire, I mean, we can go back to John Polidori writing the vampire with the Mary Shelley routine, etc. Then, of course, Bram really creating that iconic individual, which is part Orientalism, part fear of the unknown. It all connects on that basis and still has so much to say about our contemporary society, fears, desires, and concerns.
Bram was a very sensitive individual. I gleaned that from his lost journal. As a young man growing up in Ireland, he was very aware and concerned with many things. His mother was a social activist, a lot of women's rights. So he really was able to look at the world as it was and figure out what fears were going to really tap into people's, sort of into their deepest, darkest worries. And I think the superstitions that had been floating around of vampirism, but also science, technology, you know, the fear of the other from deep, dark Transylvania. Remember, he's a theater manager. He knew how to put bums in the seats, and he used that to his advantage writing Dracula. He knew what was going to actually strike the nerve of his readers. Especially, you got to realize, he was writing the story while the Ripper murders are going on. And so that was something that he used to his advantage.
And as you look back now from the perspective of the early years of the 21st century, actually second decade as we approach the 21st century, is it a case of we could see, we've had the iconography, we had, I think, the glitzy vampires, I sadly wasn't able to attend that today, but the Buffys, the Twilights, and so on and so forth, the wars between lycanthropes and vampires. Is there something fundamental about this narrative trope which is going to remain?
Well, the fundamental issue is our fascination with the afterlife. You know, this whole idea of religion as a gatekeeper for running a good life and having a nice afterlife. But superstition and myth is what answers questions when people want to know more. And that's where the whole idea of the vampire, the immortality, sort of enters. We don't know it for sure, but it's a mighty, mighty fine attraction if it is true.
Eloise, any thoughts?
What made you want to continue with the work of Dracula and keep on with the literature?
Well, I just think that, you know, part of my mission is to help the world know a little bit more about Bram Stoker. So by putting him in these novels, both Dracula the Undead and Dracul are fictionalizations of parts of Bram's life. And it was an opportunity to put it out there. And granted, I could have done a work of nonfiction, but quite frankly, they don't sell very well. So fictionalizing it opens up the eyes of the world to who this guy was, who's given us Dracula. And I thought that would be a fun way to do it.
And there is, of course, the cosmological thought that actually our particular fiction in our reality is other reality's reality.
Wow.
It's an end of day one thought to ponder.
That sounds like a glass of wine drink.
Well, there you go.
But no, it is. You know, the reality that Bram lived in, you know, was much different than today, but there's still a lot of similarities. And there are our concerns about, you know, what happens after life is over.
Having just delivered my own annual horror lecture at the University of Lincoln to the Level 3 film and media students for English and indeed film and TV, I'm always struck by the notion of fear as an acronym for false expectations appearing real.
Is that another sort of way that, you know, the classic line of we have nothing to fear except fear itself, or is it something that's it's intrinsic to our whole experience from when we stopped actually telling stories around the campfire?
Well, I believe people like to be in control, and we realize there's a lot of fear out in the world, especially today. You know,
and a lot of people who prey on that fear and manipulate fear accordingly.
And they do, but I think in a funny way, we prepare ourselves to deal with real fear by reading fiction and by watching these movies. And you know, in a strange way, you can get to close the book when you want or walk out of the movie. And so it's helping us build a response system, but in a way we have total control over it. And I think that's the key with defending the role of horror in literature and in movies, even video games. You know, you can still manage it. But let's not forget what is really out there. You know, today it's an ugly world, a lot of wars going on, terrorism going on, things going on that aren't pretty. And maybe this is our own way of coping with it, having the control over reading it and watching it.
I think it was Brian Aldiss who said science fiction is a prophylactic against future shock. Maybe there's a similar phrase waiting to be coined by yourself, Dacre.
I'll work on it and get back to you if I come up with a good one.
It's been a genuine delight. I'm really pleased we've managed to share some thoughts with you today. We'll share a meal now, which is wonderful.
Great, thank you very much.
It is day two of the Sci-Fi Weekender. Actually, technically it's day three, but who's counting these days? We have managed to secure a gentleman without whom actually Sci-Fi Weekender just wouldn't be the same. It's John Robertson. How are you, John?
Yeah, good, man. Yeah. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the energy that you put into anything, and of course, later on today, the Dark Room kicks off in force.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I'm gearing up to shout, and people are greeting me with, "I'll see you later when you're drunk." I'm like, "Oh, good, okay."
Yeah. So, I mean, you launched obviously with a wonderful commentary routine, expanded commentary routine, which even you weren't looking forward to, the expanded commentary routine for you on Friday at the awards ceremony. Was it Friday? It was Thursday.
That was Thursday. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was Thursday, which is the new Friday. I'm reliably informed.
Exactly. Yeah. So, what are your thoughts about Great Yarmouth now? Are you still looking for the great?
Yeah. Look. Great Yarmouth. Let's put it this way. Next year they've got Denise Crosby from Star Trek coming, and that is the only Great Yarmouth that will appear. And also, bear in mind, as crap a pun that is, the amount of work it takes just to have that happen. The fact Tasha Yar will be here is a wonderful thing. But yeah, you know, Great Yarmouth is an Asda and this place, as far as I can tell.
Superb. And in terms of your own self, how has it been for your good self over 2019 since last we spoke back in Sheffield?
Oh, you know, I've been tremendously busy touring around, you know, like that's it. It's just been one of those years of go, 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 go. I mean, which, to be fair, given I'm a performer, pretty much translates to, well, I was on the couch most days, but, you know, the days I wasn't, I was busy.
And what are your highlights, John, from this particular edition of Sci-Fi Weekender number 10?
Probably the moment where, in lieu of doing anything else, like perhaps any degree of scripted content, about halfway through the ninth hour of my award acceptance speech, taking off my shirt and getting the audience to do the time warp and looking down and realising Sylvester McCoy was doing the time warp, which was a real thrill.
I thought you'd say that. We were actually on Sylvester's table, and that owl playing the spoons, or indeed his curiously wiggling eyebrows, were the sort of three that we were putting up well in the top league.
Nah, he seems like a nice man. I must at some point run into him. But yeah, no, lovely, lovely.
Or maybe you already have with a time warp. I mean, you know, we have been done and done and dusted.
Yeah, he was there, it's there, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, not his catchphrase, not my problem.
And not only do we congratulate you on your award, which is richly deserved, you also have got a children's novel that's all a children's adventure that's coming out. Just share with us what's that all about.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really kind. The Little Town of Maryville, published by Penguin. It's out. You can get it anywhere you like books. It's a story about a brave young woman and her young brother as they attempt to escape a crazy town. And most of the reviews mention this because, I mean, it's moving and it's fun and it's got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of heart to it. There's also a bit of mild cannibalism, just a bit of mild cannibalism.
So just like Great Yarmouth.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, mild cannibalism and slight incest, but, you know, that's not in my book, that's the town.
Eloise, my colleague today, is currently in the meet and greet section. I'm prepping for the Stone Tapes Live, which we're doing later on. I'm not sure whether I'm actually interviewing Emily Moore. She may be there, she may not be. Or even Emily Booth. I might even get the right name before too long. But how can people get in touch with your good self, John, if they're listening to this or they're at Sci-Fi Weekender and say, how do we book that fine Australian?
Oh, well, you head over to the johnrobertson.com, head over to the contact page, or on Twitter, I'm Robotron, Robotron. On Instagram, it's Mr_Dark_Room. And on Facebook, John Robertson Comedy.
play the podcast back if you didn't have a pencil to write all those things down immediately.
Do you have a pencil? My God, it's 2019.
The second day continues of Sci-Fi Weekender, as I was saying earlier with John Robertson, possibly a third day, and I finally got the opportunity to, thanks to Robin Pierce, meet one of my all-time idols from back in the day when I was actually, I was more of an Alan McKenzie sort of coordinator when he was actually back in Marvel Times, etc. But he is the genius who, in many ways, I think is one of the founding fathers of cult quality journalism. It's the amazing Des Skin. How are you, Des?
Super, thanks, Alex. Great day here.
Marvellous. Now, I mean, I'm looking here at something which I know, Robin, you're particularly keen on saying, and you wanted to get this. It is the official House of Hammer collection.
Absolutely. It's nostalgia in hardback. It's a beautiful volume. Absolutely beautiful volume.
And obviously, I remember the sort of the notions of Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter, etc. Des, talk us through this.
Okay. It must have been about 40 years ago that I went to Hammer Films and said, you deserve a magazine of your own. I can't believe no one's done it before, and they agreed with me. I started the magazine, sadly, just as they were going out of business. So it wasn't quite the two-way street I hoped it would be, but I did keep the magazine going, and we were adapting Hammer Films into comic strips, a sort of forbidden fruit for 14-year-olds who, after all, back in the 70s, couldn't get to see any of the horror films unless they were on late-night TV and they had forgiving parents.
Absolutely. Twins of Evil, Vampire Lovers, all classics of their time.
Indeed they were, and I was fortunate in that I knew artists who could do them justice.
Absolutely. Now, you're also, of course, founding father of Starburst magazine. Let's continue from that point of view. I think Jordan Royce rightly recognises the debt he owes you to the whole thing. Just talk us through, I mean, did you think we'd still be talking about that 40-odd years later?
I'd like to think all of my ideas
of course
stand the test of time. Sadly, they don't. I've always felt that science fiction had a greater potential than had been realised, and it took Star Wars to realise that potential and to encourage others that you could actually make a profit out of a dirty word there, out of a science fiction film. Before Star Wars, totally different market. So I started Starburst, well, a strange coincidence, just when Star Wars was coming out. And in the wake of Star Wars, we've had so many excellent TV and films that there's been more than enough material to keep it going.
Robin, anything you'd like to add?
Well, I've been a reader of Starburst from the very first issue and now write to them, and I get to work sometimes and meet up with...
Let's talk Doctor Who Weekly. Let's talk Doctor Who Weekly, because, I mean, this is the other thing, Des. I still actually have the original transfers, I think, that were in issue one.
Oh, bless. it was something that I've maintained. I've made a career out of doing the obvious. There was not a publication about Doctor Who in the 70s, and it had over 8 million weekly viewers as a TV series. I went along to the BBC. I said, come on, let's do something. And that is now the world's longest running TV tie-in magazine. So I've got a Guinness World Record.
Absolutely.
For it.
And let's not also forget something which, when I was actually, I think I must have been probably 13, 14, and yes, for creativity and art, I actually used a couple of posters from Monster Mag in the back of the classroom at Mill Hill School in Middlesbrough.
Oh, Monster Mag, what a title. For those not in the know, Monster Mag was a poster mag, if you like, an ordnance survey map that had a horror poster on one side and 8 pages of features on the other side. So, was it a magazine? Was it a poster? Whatever it was, it scared the bejeevers out of parents.
And indeed worked well for the creativity, etc. Particularly the Dracula one, I think, that was actually used. That was one of the early editions, I think.
You mean when we did the actual poster?
Yes.
I obvious here, it was a poster mag. I thought, why don't we put a film poster as a poster?
This is Stan Lee levels of genius here. It's fantastic. Anything else, Robert?
I remember having some of those.
V for Vendetta.
There's another debt that we owe you to society.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister. Everything seemed to be going to hell in a handbasket. And in World War II, Churchill had said V for victory. we felt in 1983, knowing that 1984 was a famous year, that V would be for Vendetta. So I coined the title and commissioned a writer and an artist to do the work. That's the beauty of being an editor-publisher. You get other people to do the work. And I couldn't believe Warner Brothers made a film of it, simply because it's about an anarchist. This was after the Twin Towers. Yet they championed a film where our hero blows up the House of Parliament in the first reel.
And of course, life imitating art. Of course, we've heard the V for Vendetta masks emerging very much as iconic in all sorts of ways, Extinction Rebellion and so on.
The absurdity about that is, yes, you've got these anonymous masks, but they have to pay a royalty to Warner Brothers for manufacturing them. And yes, I get my share.
Brilliant, which is one of the reasons why I remember my first ever location report, actually, with the, I think you just left Marvel Comics, and we did a piece with, I think it might have been Tim Hampson and Alan McKenzie.
Oh, he was my production manager,
yes.
Tim.
Yeah. He was always, we used to speak in hushed tones of the legendary awesome Des Skin when I was up.
I don't know why.
It's a delight to have met you after all this time, Des. Destiny was there. Robin, any final closing thoughts?
The only guy I've ever known who made a profit out of anarchy. He's a legend just for that.
Thanks very much. Just lovely talking with you.
Many thanks. And just a plug once again for the actual Eclectic Classics, etc., the online system. Best way to actually get them if people can't get to Sci-Fi Weekender?
Facebook. It's as simple as that. I have a strangely unique name.
D-E-Z. And D-E-Z if you're American.
Yes, and S-K-I-N-N. There aren't many of those around,
no.
So just Facebook search Des Skin and you'll find me and my wares.
Magic will ensue.
It will.
David Warner, absolutely amazing individual, true legendary character. When I spoke to some of my author friends, they said, David Warner, he is probably the best British actor we've ever got. One, David, good to connect with your good self.
Thank you. I can't follow that. I'm not the best British. Thank you. I'm
Time
not.
Bandits, was with, I mean, without your good self, it just wouldn't have occurred.
Who's talking, you or me? No, I'm not. Thank you for your compliment, but I do my best, but I know where I stand in the hierarchy of actors in this country. So, but thank you for the compliment.
Well, David, it's still a delight to actually see you here. Any initial thoughts on Sci-Fi Weekend at Great Yarmouth?
No, well, I've enjoyed it very much. I mean, the people are lovely, and I love the setup here. I love what they do on the stage at the same time. I mean, what can I say? I mean, I'm really enjoying it.
Well, I was pleased that Robin made a reference to your Cardassian role with Three Lights and John and Sir Patrick Stewart, of course. In fact, I think the campaign for Sir David Warner should be starting soon. But
No, we don't do that. No, we don't do we don't do awards or anything like that in my life. And it's not Three Lights. It's either four or five.
Thank you. Robin.
I've just been corrected by David Warner. I'm so embarrassed. It is a pleasure to meet you. I mean, you know, your legacy in sci-fi, I mean, Tron, for example, Star Trek, I mean, you have done it all. What's the highlight of your sci-fi career?
Well, I think the highlight, I mean, look, it's all fantastic to have been asked to be in any way involved with that. I suppose in the end of you, working with Patrick Stewart again, because we were in theatre together in Stratford-on-Avon in 1964 or 5. And then, you know, Patrick went through the roof and became, you know, the great Patrick Stewart. So it was great to have an opportunity of actually almost doing a two-hander with him in that particular episode of Chain of Command. So that was really, to me, a very memorable, but they were all wonderful. I mean, regardless
and of course, Chancellor Gowron, of course.
Gorkon.
Yes.
You've got to get it right, love. No, I'm joking with you. No, Gorkon was fine. And the Cardassian. And a human being I did in 5. So, and Tron, you know, was also a breakthrough kind of picture.
David, it's been absolutely amazing. We look forward to many, many more roles and adventures from your good self. I think you've brought so much pleasure and imagination come to life in so many ways.
Thank you. You're very kind. But it is the writer who creates it, and we only do our best with the material.
Is there a David Warner autobiography that's actually around as yet?
No.
Will there be?
I can't even write a postcard. Never know an autobiography.
David, many thanks indeed, and we wish you well for the rest of the session today.
Thanks for asking me to participate in your programme.
two decades playing Bernie Summerfield. That's astounding.
It is extraordinary. I mean, just generally my connection with Doctor Who has been a bit bonkers, because obviously I did Survival back in 1989, and then Bernie Summerfield came along quite literally in 98 thinking, oh, it'll be a couple of weeks and then they'll disappear, because, you know, when I first met the chaps behind Big Finish, where they first started off, I just thought it was a bunch of, you know...
Now, of course, moving on from that, there is that wonderful interconnection that you have moved much more into direction. You're one of the most respected audio directors and producers now. Was that always part of the career plan?
Well, no, it wasn't. I mean, I'd done a tiny bit of, I mean, directing in inverted commas for a company called Independent Radio Drama Productions, which ran out of LBC as a radio station in London. But when I had when they first got the Doctor Who license, I was promised directing. And of course, those guys, it's like the Holy Grail to those guys. It was never going to happen. And it was actually Nigel Fairs, who was doing The Tomorrow People, who got me my first proper directing gig. And then I suddenly realised I really enjoyed it. And I'm a bit like a kid in a sweet shop. You know, I do my own casting, and you get a script and you go, ooh. And that, now, because Big Finish's name and its lunches are so legendary, I can generally, it's a silly thing to say, I can generally get who I want, you know. And that stretches from drama school graduates to, you know, Knights of the Realm. So it's really exciting.
So in an era where clearly in terms of young folk who will be listening to this, maybe at a drama school at present, etc., I mean, is there any advice you can actually provide for a young up-and-coming actor, say, I want to be the next Lisa Bowman?
Well, it's more by luck than good judgment. Let's just put it that way. I mean, as graduates leave, it's a very different industry from the one I came in. It was still very quite protected by its union, and of course that simply doesn't exist anymore. Be prepared to do something else if you need to keep the other ones. To actually have a living as an actor is easier said than done. But in terms of audio, I mean, I actually think there's a much wider range of employment opportunities with voice than anything else. I had my arguments, there was a drama school recently that dropped its audio side, and I think they were insane, because there's audiobooks, there's games, you know, voicing for games, video
games.
We're
doing audio at this very moment.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, interviews like this, audio dramas, Audible are expanding. A lot of other companies are expanding into that world, whether it be drama or audio books. And as an actor, I think it's the ultimate form of doing the job.
The scenery is so much better on radio surely.
Yeah. And, you know, the hours learning the lines are not quite so good.
It's terrible. Anyway, so moving on, where will you be taking the Lisa Bowman Roadshow next? Where will you be going to?
Well, in terms of work, I'm still doing the odd bit and bob for Big Finish. Obviously, last year, I was very lucky. I directed a version of War of the Worlds for Sherwood Sound that did very well. And I think Martin, who runs that, has got a few other plans. So maybe something might come from that. I've actually just got new representation who are promising some interesting, exciting things. But you don't believe anything until you know, write on the
dot. Have a contact with our Los Angeles producers and agents to say it's time Lisa Bowman made the transatlantic journey as well.
Well, in terms of conventions, actually, David and I are going to Pensacola in February. For their big Comic Con there. I did it about 3 or 4 years ago, and it's such a pretty place as well. So we're quite excited to go there.
And of course, today you're sitting right next to Sophie Aldred, of course, who's also here. Sophie was interviewed by both Robin and myself.
There's a project I've just done with Sophie, which is completely unrelated to science fiction or to Doctor Who, which we can't announce yet, but it's a kind of web series. So we had great fun doing that a couple of weeks ago.
So watch this space. I was actually going to invite Sophie to do a bit of the interviewing, but she's obviously moved away. Shall we sort of nudge her in, Lisa?
You can join the queue.
Yes.
But it's a joy to meet you, and also what's nice is talking to people who actually still haven't come across Big Finish and their work, and it's so lovely to be able to show them quite how much is there on offer. You know, whether you're a Torchwood fan or, you know, Space 1999 has just come out, so it's
I know Jamie Anderson was very excited by that. We spoke to Jamie and worked with her, and Sophie's hopefully back with us. Sophie, great to see you once again. How's it been going over the weekend?
Yeah, it's great, thank you. This is a very different kind of convention. It meets a gap for fans who love to come and party, and there's masses of entertainment, there's nightlife. There's lots and lots to do, so yeah.
Well, I've got to say, I mean, clearly the little teaser that Lisa just gave about a project we can't speak about, but it's there. But surely there has to be an audio version with Lisa and yourself of Bananas in Pyjamas. That has to be in the offer.
Well, that's new to me.
He's obsessed with Bananas in Pyjamas, this man. Yeah.
No, when you say obsessed, Sophie.
Well, what I did was I
on the animation of Bananas and Pyjamas, I played the character of Morgan the Bear, who's very cute. And
maybe I could play Morgan's mother or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, it's coming out. It's going to happen. I know. I just sense it. It's going to work on that basis. Sophie Aldred, once again, in terms of way things are going. I mean, the official Sophie Aldred magazine that I've just seen here.
I haven't actually.
Okay, talk to us about it.
Yeah. Probably about 5 years ago, Des Skin, who was the guy...
We've just actually spoken to over there.
There you go. Well, he approached me and he said, would you fancy doing a poster magazine like I made for Caroline Munro, one of the Bond girls? And I thought, yeah, what a great idea, because it gives fans something else, as well as a 10x8 glossy. They can have this, and it's got like, it's a poster mag, so it folds out. I'll show you.
A magazine and a poster as well.
Yeah, it works well on audio, obviously. But I'm so chuffed with it. It's absolutely great. It took us a long time because I really wanted to choose the right images. So you've got a massive poster of me having just
that. That will be referred to again in this afternoon's edition of the Stone Tapes.
Right.
I've had to sort of couch Sam Stone on the notion of where we're going with that. And you've also got climbing up a wall.
Yeah, that's Curse of Fenric. And then other stuff I've done as well as Doctor Who. So children's programmes, West End musical, modelling shots, things like that.
That's so phenomenal. I think I'll even purchase one for Siren Broadcasting just for the whole thing. I mean, that's absolutely wonderful. Great stuff. So are you ready and able to join us for the Stone Tapes today?
I certainly am, yes. Excellent. I will be there.
I think it's a case of Sam Stone in particular would classify you as very much the first ever badass heroine that's actually there, particularly with the baseball bat.
Absolutely. That's me.
Sophie, many thanks indeed, and of course Lisa as well. I will purchase one of these magazines because I'll say that's all the matter of course. The power of speech is going, Sophie. It's amazing. We'll speak again very soon.
Lovely, thank you.
I think clearly the universe and the cosmos is working in so many positive ways, Robin, because who would have thought that after the performance, the wonderful performance we saw on Thursday evening, the awards ceremony of award-winning artist extraordinaire Simon Bisley, he would say he was born in Lincoln, and you were.
I was born in Lincoln in 1962, but I also won a Clanger Award.
And indeed.
So I saw these two awards in the morning, hungover, and I thought, oh wow, what are these? I picked the one and said Clang. I thought, oh my God, is this...
And you dropped one.
I thought, is that my life?
Is it a soup dragon?
Soup dragon, yeah. I thought, is this a award for my career or something? I just, you know, no, it was good fun. No, we had a band together. We had a band thrown together about 3 years ago. Sci-fi, it was so bad that it gave us a Clang Award. Which is great. At least we had some kind of reaction.
Absolutely. Legendary. Yeah,
legendary bad band.
Anyway. Meanwhile, wearing your hat as ace artist, Simon Bisley, I mean, I have to say, some of the material you got here with the Joker, with Venom, with the various sort of characters there, what inspires you? Or who inspires you?
Well, it's other artists that originally inspired me, but as you go along, just, you know, life, people you meet. I'm sure you're going to turn up in a comic book somewhere, you know?
Well,
you know, it's like, I suppose it's like a comedian or an actor. They just absorb. It's interesting because I know there's a lot of actors who are quite manic in their performances and striking, even aggressive, frightening, or however they portray the part. In real life, they're very, very quiet. They just sit down. They're not like you think. Their personalities are quite dull, but they switch it on when they have to. But they observe and look. And so I do the same thing.
Nodding there from Robin, which always works well on radio, so splendid. I look.
He's just sitting in the back of my car, seat, just nodding his head like that, like those dogs.
It's genius.
Keep nodding there, because you'll be doing.
that's very scary. Sadly, this year, obviously, we lost Carlos Esquerra, genius artist from that point of view, and of course, one of your fellow folk with respect to 2000D.
I just loved him as a man. You know, he was awesome. You know,
it would have been interesting if he'd actually won the award and turned up to receive it, shall we say?
Well, that'd be strange, wouldn't it?
It would. I was half expecting
it. You think I'm macabre? He's not nodding. No, he's not sure. We're not sure about this. We think you're weird.
But I'll stick to artists that I was particularly sort of... I mean, I'm not an artist myself in any way, shape or form, but although even though I have the badge which says artist on, maybe it's a different kind. In terms of Jim Steranko, in terms of Brian Bolland, and also I'd probably say Steve Ditko were three, I thought, key influentials. What about your own graphic narrative favourite artists?
I think you just named them, actually. Yeah.
I mean, Steranko's still around and still with us, of course.
I see Steranko here and there in America at different shows. Extraordinary eye. And he was way, way ahead of his time. I mean, all this kind of... Well, I don't know what they were doing in the 60s, but he certainly had had a very kind of...
what he did for S.H.I.E.L.D., Nick Fury, where he had to turn the page around and all this.
He was going to the Dali-esque, into the surreal, absolutely. And they still kept the figurative form figurative, and it wasn't overly exaggerated and everything like that. And nothing was really obscure. It was all very clear what he was doing, but the way he would collage it together, throw it together. I'd recommend anyone to look at... who's the other guy you cited?
Well, I'd also say, I mean, the late Steve Ditko, again, quite unique in his own way. Sadly...
Ditko, hands down. I mean, you've got your Jack Kirby, Ditko, the guys who created all these superheroes we know today.
I'd throw in Neil Adams as well.
Of course, yeah. Legend, absolute legend. Of course.
Looking at some of your work, the way that you draw, particularly the female form, shall we say, how far were you influenced by Frank Frazetta?
Oh, all the way. Frank Frazetta was my... interesting. Now, here's my favourite. I
always thought those brass braziers were quite painful, actually, if you sort of overdid it, really. They could be quite, you know, a little bit harsh on the old upper thorax.
I usually model them myself, you know. Where
exactly.
They do chaff a little bit.
Well, that's what moves are for, let's face it, at the end of the day. It's to work our way through that. And
I should sell some. I don't know what am I talking about. No, Frazetta for me is probably the greatest, one of the greatest artists ever. And in terms of like fine art as well.
And I also mentioned Brian Bolland, who again is still with us, and clearly, right. I think, you know,
very clinical, very clinical. Brian Bolland was a very clinical artist, and I think Steranko was as well. Whereas I'm much more quicker and more exuberant and attack my work.
I think your work has a kinetic energy, and it sort of goes finally in this sort of little appreciation, which I wasn't expecting, of artists, etc. I think mention needs to be given to George Perez, because again, with Marv Wolfman, his work on Teen Titans, I thought was pretty much outstanding.
I agree. I mean, who do we dislike? I mean, you know. Oh, you got a list.
Hi, Boo.
Hello. How's it going, Boo? Boo just turned up.
There we are.
What are you doing here?
I don't know.
I think it's way later than
actually, I know. Hey, did you hear when I was on stage? I jumped off the stage to be cool. The stage is only a foot high, but I nearly did my knees in. And someone had to give me a hand to go back up onto the stage again. I should have gone down the stairs and gone round.
See, Robin, I knew you said we should have been there, but sadly we weren't. But that's...
It was all right, mate. It was good. I had everything turned up. If it doubt, turn everything up. Deaf and everybody. So they don't know what the shit they're listening to, you know.
For the moment, Simon Bisley, a reminder, of course, you can go to simonbisleyart.com. That's simonbisleyart.com, and presumably purchase online?
No, I don't sell stuff online.
Wow.
I sell nothing online, no posters, prints, or anything. I mean, I'll get in touch with me on that contact for commissions, yeah.
Simon.
And I'll take your money that way.
Thank you, Simon. Many thanks indeed. A genuine pleasure. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Well, we've moved on from one of our artists, Simon Bisley, to speak to a fantastic artist whose name is...
Tiani Farr.
Vianney?
Tiani.
Now, what we've got here, Tiani, is a range of wonderful, I'd say organically crafted, delightful things. Tahani Fah, of course, exactly, yes. Talk to us about what inspires you when it comes to great art.
I really enjoy reading, so some of the pieces I do, mostly all of them, they have been commissioned, but I do like to indulge a lot and investigate, and I get inspired so much by reading books that have themes that are very related to the artwork I'm doing and getting very deep into these concepts. So I really like anthropology, mythology, ancient beliefs, ancient legends, all this, and to mix these ancient concepts with a modern, futuristic, post-apocalyptic view, that is one of the things that inspires me and I enjoy the most.
And in terms of training, did you go to the traditional art school, or how did you actually develop your skills?
No, I did. I went to a design school, but on my traditional techniques, I have discovered one by one through time and a lot of practice. I've been working now as an artist for 5 years. And when I start, I really just began with a pencil, and so slowly but surely, every drawing I would add one technique extra and see if I could understand it, and one technique extra, until now I'm doing full range color and multimedia illustrations.
And in an era very much of female empowerment and so on, I mean, just talk to us what you're currently sort of working on at present. What's this going to evolve into?
This here is a sketch. It really started off by nothing, just an idea, and I'm very much into cyberpunk right now, and I just finished reading Duandoid and Dream of Electric Sheep. So all this Blade Runner kind of concept of futuristic worlds that are falling apart and cyberpunk, so I really enjoyed to feel myself as part of the characters.
So clearly, if you're looking at Duandoid's Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, very much the precursor. Have you encountered William Gibson's Neuromancer as yet?
I have not read that one.
Well, that I think will be the next stage further forward, and I'm sure you could actually see the characters of both Case and Wintermute as being essential in terms of inspiration.
Necromancer it's called.
Neuromancer. Neuromancer.
Neuromancer. No, I haven't even heard about that.
Well, it's the next one. It's basically William Gibson's debut novel. When he actually wrote it, before it was published, he saw Ridley Scott's adaptation of Duandoid's Dream of Electric Sheep, which is Blade Runner, of course, and he felt that actually he'd lost all his ideas then, but actually the two worked very well. So if you're into cyberpunk, Neuromancer by William Gibson.
I will do that. Right now I've been reading Stephen King, so I'm reading
That's okay.
And because I have to do a few artworks that are pretty dark, so I started to read Pet Sematary, and I'm right now on The Stand.
Excellent. And a website, how can people actually get in touch with you online? Is there a way, do you have a website already?
Yes, with my name, Tiani Farr, basically anywhere. I'm the only person under that name, so I've got a website, www.tianifarr.com, on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, under that name. If you just write Farr, also that appears.
Tihani, it's been a delight connecting with you, good self, today. We look forward to seeing you at future Sci-Fi Weekenders.
I hope so. I come from Mexico, so I'm really far away, but I hope to be coming back at least every 1 or 2 years and do a few shows here in England.
Fantastic. A genuine delight. Many thanks.
Thank you so much.